Let me ask you something. What if there was someone out there who kept a log of every single thing you did every minute of the day? That would probably creep you out. Well, that's exactly what happens every time you go online. Your internet provider stores logs of every website you've ever visited and can legally sell this data to anyone. Worse yet, the government can obtain your data via bulk FISA order even if you're not personally suspected of any crime. That's why I use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN reroutes your internet connection through their secure servers so your internet provider can't see or log what you do online. Visit expressvpn.com/Mullen right now and find out how you can get 3 months for free. That's expressvpn.com/Mullen. Protect your data and get 3 months for free today.
Every revolution starts in the minds of the people. Arm yourself for the war of ideas. Take back your life. Take back your liberty. Tom Mullen talks freedom.
Hello, everyone. Happy New Year and welcome back to Tom Mullen Talks Freedom. Today, I wanted to talk a little bit of about something that I've recently written about, recently being about an hour ago. And if you're on my email list, you got an email with a link to an article, a free article on my Substack and Patreon. Giving this one away because I wanted as many people as possible to see it, about basically a viral meme that had been going around about Dolly Parton, the singer. I should say singer, songwriter, actress, and undoubtedly a marvelous talent, whether you like the style of her music or not, or you like her movies or not. She's become a very rich woman because millions and millions of people do appreciate what she does, and that's very good for her. But the crux of this meme was that she's not a billionaire like Paul McCartney is because she's given away so much of her money. And of course, you know, written by a liberal or a socialist, but I repeat myself, this also goes on to wag its finger at the reader saying it's a moral failing to be a billionaire. And so I delved into that whole argument in the piece I wrote, and I've got more things to say, which is why I'm also bringing this up on the podcast. And basically what I argued is, look, all of history shows us that people pursuing their own self-interest, in other words, had she invested that money in profitable enterprises, she would have done far more good for more people than giving the money away, as she has. Okay, so I linked to an article that claimed a couple of years ago that Dolly was worth about $350 million. So, you know, taking the meme's premise as true, that she would be a billionaire, which means she has foregone at least $650 million in net worth. And maybe more if she was someone worth $3 billion or $5 billion or whatever, to give away that money to charity. And instead, now her net worth is only $350 million. So, I mean, even on the meme's own premise, this is false. And I linked to an article listing the top five philanthropists from 2023, the people who gave away the most money. And those people were all billionaires. There were four men and one woman. So in case anyone says, well, it's just discrimination because Dolly's a woman. Now, one of the billionaires was a woman. She might have been number three on the list. I can't remember. Of course, we all know Oprah Winfrey is a billionaire. No one seems to think this is a moral failing, but there it is. And of course, I don't think that being a billionaire is at all a moral failing. It's more like a scorecard for how much good you've done in the world. Assuming, of course, you're not making your money off of tax-derived enterprises off of war or some other government plundering mechanism, but that if you're making $1 billion out in the free market by providing $1 billion worth of goods or services or both to other people, then of course I'm all for you being a billionaire. And my general point is you've done far more good for far more people, including the poorest in society, by doing that, by becoming a billionaire. So it would have been much better for the poorest people if Dolly became a billionaire rather than forego it, because she would have taken that $650 million or whatever portion of it she gave up in order to not be a billionaire. She would have invested that in profitable industries, and that's what lifts people out of poverty, as all history shows. And again, I mean, those five billionaires gave away a lot more money last year. Each one of them gave away a lot more than Dolly Parton could possibly give away, because they have more to give. And I'm very aware of the Bible passage that says the old lady whose husband died gave more because it was all she had. But the bottom line is that the other people helped far more people by giving away more money in real terms. Now, this assumes, of course, you know, the premise that it's better to give the money away. But I argue further that even the billionaires who gave away more than Dolly did, they would have helped more people if they just invested their money for profit. Okay. And I mean, there's all kinds of emotional arguments against this, but the plain fact of the matter is that people do more good by pursuing their self-interest and pursuing profit than they do by intentionally trying to sacrifice their self-interest for the good of others. And again, just look at history. Why is China an economic power? China was destitute when I was born. It was in the middle of what they called the Cultural Revolution and one of Mao Zedong's five-year plans. And it was destitute for a lot of my childhood. When I was a kid, if I didn't finish my food, my mother would say, "You better eat that. There's people starving in China." Okay, why were they starving? Because they were under a system that assumed it was better to even forcibly redistribute wealth than it was to allow people to keep their own money and pursue their self-interest. And the fact that it was forcible and the fact that Dolly's activities are voluntary doesn't change the economics of this. These are some of the things I didn't say explicitly in the piece. But to just give away the money and have it blown on consumption. Now, you know, somebody is helped by that. Okay. And here's one of the things that makes it emotionally more satisfying. If you have the means and you can give away millions of dollars, you can choose who it is you're going to give it to. And you can see that person get it. And you can see if they need an operation that they got the operation, or if it's a bunch of, you know, kids in an orphanage that you built a new wing of the orphanage and they all have nicer rooms, whatever. You can see that. When you invest it in the market, far more people are lifted out of poverty. This is a fact. It's not in dispute. But you don't get to see exactly who it was that benefited. And to the argument that, capitalism just makes the top rich. No, that's refuted by history. Since 1990, 1 billion people have been lifted out of extreme poverty. And 100% of those gains were made in countries that used to be socialist that became more capitalist. Are they laissez-faire? No, but they became more capitalist. In other words, they redistributed less wealth and let people keep more of their own, let them make more economic decisions according to their self-interest, and less was diverted towards the common good. That's what happened. That's what always happens. There are no counterexamples in history of countries that did this and didn't become richer, and whose poorest people didn't become substantially better off after they made these decisions. The record is 100%. Okay? So, we seem to be, this is what I call the great paradox of human existence, because we are completely emotionally wired against what is demonstrably best for us. Okay, we've had enough examples over and over and over. We've had countries that were basically capitalist become more socialist, like Sweden in the 60s and 70s, get into all kinds of trouble, cut taxes, cut regulations, get themselves out of trouble, as Sweden did in the early 90s. Okay, I mean, it is, the record is 100%. There are no countries where they were kind of laissez-faire capitalist and decided to become more socialist and their poverty rates dropped. Quite the contrary. The opposite is true. So we don't need any more proof. Reason, even just our own empirical observation of the world. You don't even need to know economics. You just have to look at the world and observe with your own eyes that it's indisputable that the way to lift the most people out of poverty is to allow people to pursue their own self-interests economically, to protect their property rights, to in fact not redistribute their wealth for some common good, but to let them keep all their wealth for themselves. And you have to remember, as a sidelight, what it means to be worth, you know, whatever the numbers just keep exploding because of inflation, but I think Bezos at one time was worth $123 billion. And then you see all these nitwits posting that and saying he can afford to pay his fair share or whatever. So the $123 billion is not just cash sitting in a bank account or a vault, okay? The vast majority of these billionaires' wealth is stock they hold in the companies they founded. That's where Gates' wealth came from. That's where Bezos' wealth came from. Even though he left Amazon, he still owns, I don't know how much, what percentage. At one time, he owned quite a big percentage, because a lot of them become minority owners after they go public, but they're still very rich because they still own an awful lot. They may be the largest shareholder, but a lot of them aren't even majority shareholders. So the holding of the stock in the company they founded, and the fact that it appreciates, when the stock appreciates, it gives them access to more credit because their asset side goes up. They can afford more debt on the other side to borrow and expand and create new wealth, create new jobs for people. And to everyone that uses the words trickle down, okay, this is a straw man. No one's saying anything is trickling down to anybody. When these productive structures expand, it provides opportunities for people to create wealth for themselves. When a person is hired at Amazon to do a job that didn't exist before, that person is creating wealth, him or herself, that didn't exist before, by providing those services and doing whatever it is they do, so that Amazon can realize more revenue. Okay, there's no trickling and there's no redistributing at all. Okay, it's earned by the person. That person gets to keep it. That's how the world works. Everybody starts at zero. Okay, and if you doubt this, just quit your job and wait 3 months and see what happens. All right, the baseline of human existence is grinding poverty and starvation. Only by producing something can we then consume. Only by producing more can we consume more. Okay? The only way for anyone to rise out of barely keeping themselves alive is to become more productive. And what makes them more productive is acquiring skills themselves and being given an opportunity to use capital goods, machines, software systems, whatever. Okay. Had Dolly Parton invested her money in profitable enterprises, which, by the way, she has the ability to do. It's not like Dolly needs help with investment advice. And if she does, that's fine. She can hire an expert. But, I mean, she invested in Dollyland 35 years ago or something like that. And it's a phenomenal success. Okay, so everything this woman has done in her own self-interest has turned to gold. And it's not to say that the charitable contributions that she made didn't help anybody. I'm sure everybody on the other end of those was very appreciative. Although one of them went to Vanderbilt University and helped Big Pharma make that that thing that everybody is not allowed to talk about. But aside from that, I mean, she's donated to all kinds of things. And okay, so let's just put some number, and you just call it whatever you want. Let's say it's $1 billion. She didn't give away $1 billion, but let's just say it's $50 million. Like $50 million that she in benefits she conferred on others that she otherwise could have spent that money, she could have invested it. What I'm saying is that not that nobody benefited, but that far more people, that number may have been more like 500 million had she invested it and in a profitable enterprise, become richer herself, become a billionaire. And of course, all those benefits are out there to anonymous strangers. And again, this isn't as satisfying for Dolly. It's not as satisfying for the average person who wants to hear, oh, this is the, I saw a picture of like a sick guy, and I'm glad that guy got help. And she paid for his medical care, whatever she did, donated some to some research that cured him, whatever. But had she invested it in profitable enterprises, people that we wouldn't be able to necessarily identify would have been helped instead, and far more of them than the people she helped by direct charity. So, I mean, someone might say, well, why, you know, we should make sure that that the neediest get it. That's the benefit of the charity instead of, you know, the market. Well, we've seen the market distributes it to the very neediest. That's why the people in extreme poverty were the ones lifted out over the last 30 years by the impersonal forces of the market economy. And you can kind of understand the cause and effect behind this because, okay, this gets invested. And what do these people want to do? They want to expand the productive structure to make profits, not to help anybody. But in doing so, what are they going to do? They're going to go look for labor and another unjustly demonized aspect of the market. They're going to go find the labor where it's cheapest. Well, what does that mean? It's where the people are the poorest. And they're going to hire those people. And I'll tell you, for everybody that goes around pontificating about so-called sweatshops, every single person in those jobs is thanking God, if they believe in one, that that sweatshop came along, because it's offering them better circumstances than the ones before it came along that they were in. If it wasn't, they wouldn't be there. And having done a little bit of business in China, I can tell you that the Chinese are stampeding, or they were 20 years ago when I was there, for the new jobs being created as the Chinese pivoted from communism to capitalism. They were dying for those jobs because they lifted them out of starvation and into a stable, albeit by our standards, lower standard of living, but a higher standard of living than they were in before. And we're talking by orders of magnitude. So it's the profit motive itself that causes the good to be done. And just contrast this with all of the philanthropists you can think of from history. I know I've got a libertarian audience, and they're not big fans of the Rockefellers or Carnegie or J.P. Morgan. You know, it's kind of an ambivalent relationship. We like what they did as entrepreneurs in the market, but what is it we don't like that they did? Start all those foundations, right? Okay, that's what they did when they stopped acting for profit and started acting as philanthropists. How about Bill Gates? Same story. Okay. At best, the philanthropic efforts of all of the above, Rockefeller, Carnegie, Morgan, Gates, and the rest of them, are a double-edged sword. That's being at its most charitable. At worst, it's all a dead loss. That it's like, you know, it would have been better, and it would have been better, had they just kept on investing their money in profitable enterprises. The fact that Buffett's going to give away his vast fortune, this is looked on by everyone as, oh, what a wonderful person he is. No, he's going to do terrible harm in opportunity costs by giving away that fortune than he would if he just invested it in for-profit ventures, as he has all his life. So hopefully I don't have to present more proof of this thesis. It's as old as economics itself. I mean, Adam Smith made this statement 250 plus years ago when he first made it in Theory of Moral Sentiments. And it's been demonstrated over and over again. But I think that people miss how central the concept of the invisible hand is to our conflict with people who are on the other side, especially economically. Because for these people, they cannot accept this basic truth that that people acting in their self-interest do more good than the do-gooders. They can't accept it. They're too emotionally invested in selflessness. And I think I've mentioned this before, but again, when you argue with a statist, be they the right wing or left wing variety, and especially the left wing, I would say, and you say, look at this program you have is a disaster. The first thing that they'll say to you, you don't understand what we're trying to do is, okay, first the arrogant assumption that we just must not understand their enlightened intentions. And secondly, they immediately go to their intentions. They never go to the results. Yes, I know what you're trying to do. I'm not stupid. In fact, I'm probably smarter than you because I don't believe this is going to work. And I never did. And you did. So, but again, this isn't a matter of smart. Very smart people believe in these boondoggles because they're wrapped up in the intention of the program. And for them, intention is everything. It doesn't matter what the results are. You come to them with the results of the Department of Education. Now, what could possibly have a better case for abolition than the department, the Federal Department of Education? Absolutely nothing to defend it whatsoever. From every perspective, it has been a disaster. But the intentions are good. Well, they're good according to people who think that it's morally superior to forcibly take someone's money away and use it for something you intend to do good to somebody else than it is to just let that person keep his or her own money and pursue their own interests with it. And of course, this whole moral question begs another one. Why is it that these people that you want to help are more entitled to this money than the people you're going to take it away from at gunpoint? Who made that decision? And regardless, if the thing is, well, the people we're taking it from have plenty and the people we're giving it to don't have enough. Okay, well, we've already demonstrated that to help that second group, you need to not to let people keep their money. So, I mean, this the only way that you can get to a moral argument for the redistribution model is to conclude that it's better to help less people than to help more people. Or that it's better to help the same amount of people less than to help them more. And that can't be the moral position. And if it is, then morality is ludicrous. But of course, we know that's not true. So the morality, the moral path must lie, be the one that leads to the maximization of the most happiness, the most help, the most assistance to the most people. And I'm not sure that the discipline of economics is really a helpful way of attacking that argument, because economics, the way it's practiced today, attempts to be a science. And this is a whole other podcast that I'll do. I'm not sure that the discipline of economics has been helpful to mankind at all, but especially not in recent decades, where it is more and more tried to be a science like physics, where, well, we're just going to go out and collect data, and then we're going to reach our economic conclusions from our empirical observations. You know, the whole Austrian school says that's impossible, and they don't attempt to do that. And I'm not sure, it's a little bit like COVID. Like, you can go dive into all of these RCT studies, and I actually did for a book I ghost wrote for an epidemiologist, but you really shouldn't have to. You just take a step back and look at the vast number of places that did not do the COVID restrictions, where they've had the same or better results. And that should be enough. You shouldn't need to know, like, the age-adjusted death rates. You should just be able to look around and say, you know what? I smell a rat, or at least, you know, a departure from reality here. And it's somewhat the same with economics. You really don't need to do regression models and all kinds of calculations to see the plain facts of history, that wherever people have been allowed to pursue their self-interest individually, poverty has been reduced exponentially. And it's somewhere there that we can break this emotional attachment to the opposite view. And that's what it is. It's an emotional attachment that keeps people from acknowledging, from admitting to themselves what is plainly obvious. And that's really the fight that we have. It's not we just need to share some information. We need to find a way to break that emotional attachment in as many people as possible. At one time, there was something called an age of reason. And they call it that for good reason, because people were able to set that aside and come up with what became the free market theory that basically built all of modern civilization. When you look at graphs, and I think I linked to one in my piece that shows per capita income, it goes along pretty much unchanged for thousands of years, and then all of a sudden it goes straight up. And there's no secret about what it was that caused that. So I guess I'll leave it there. And the takeaway from this talk is that I think we need to acknowledge what we're dealing with and focus on that emotional attachment, and even call it out to people if you're trying to persuade them. Say, look, you have an emotional attachment that you're going to do more good by sacrificing your self-interest. And history just says that's wrong. Whether you like it or not, I know it's a tough pill to swallow, but letting the greediest person you know pursue their own self-interest, provided they are not allowed to violate other people's property rights, that's what does the most good. And if you could break that emotional attachment, I think the rest of it is all running downhill. All right, friends, that's going to do it for today. Just a few reminders to stop by TomMullenTalksFreedom.com/support. And check out all the ways that you can support my efforts here, including joining my Patreon or my Substack. And if you haven't already, make sure that you go to itsthefedstupid.com to download a copy of my free ebook, It's the Fed Stupid. And as always, if you like the music you've heard here on Tom Mullen Talks Freedom, you can hear more at TomMullenSings.com. Thanks for listening.
The War of Ideas has only just begun. Arm yourself with the knowledge you need by heading to TomMullenTalksFreedom.com and subscribing to our email list. And remember, every revolution starts in the minds of the people.